take the point, 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 take the point. All right, welcome everybody to the Take the Points College Football Podcast. We're here with a special surprise holiday week podcast. Last time you heard from us, we were breaking down the semifinal matchup in the greatest teams of our lifetime bracket. This is something we've been doing all season, where we take the 16 best teams from 92 present, you know, our adult and teenage lifetime, and we paired them up in a NCAA style bracket, and we've been doing these hypothetical matchups, and the winner moves on. And 95 Nebraska just moved on to our finals. And so today we're here with the second semifinal game to see who gets to face them. And the teams that we're going to be facing off are 2008 Florida, the Tim Tebow championship year, and 2009 Alabama, which is the Greg McElroy national championship year. So without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to Ryan Spillett, who's going to give us a little bit of a reminder of who was on these teams, coaches, and maybe some of the better moments. Take it away.
All right, Tom. Thanks for that intro. So we're going to get this thing kicked off with a quick little recap of the 09 Crimson Tide, coached obviously by Nick Saban in his third season. Also in his third season, Jim McElwain, offensive coordinator, Kirby Smart, defensive coordinator. As Tom said, team was led by Greg McElroy at quarterback, but really this team was led by the 1-2 punch of Mark Ingram and Trent Richardson at running back. That season, Ingram actually became the first player from Alabama to win a Heisman Trophy, which seems pretty shocking that it took all the way till then to get an Alabama player to win a Heisman, but that is the case. Alabama undefeated that season, ran through the regular season and the SEC pretty easily, actually. Just led by a really super solid team, did not ever make any mistakes, and just to never beat themselves. But started the year off strong with a 34-24 win over a highly ranked Vatek, and just kept that thing rolling the rest of the year all the way to a national championship over a Colt McCoy-less Texas Longhorns after he did get injured very early on.
All right. So, Dan, what do you remember about 2009 Alabama? That was the first Saban championship year at Alabama.
Yeah, I remember underrating them the whole year, not really thinking that they were as good as they were, thinking that Florida was going to wax them in the SEC title game, thinking they were all fool's gold, that they didn't play a hard schedule, that they got lucky in that game against Tennessee with Mountain Cody and Lane Kiffin. I believe it's that year. I just, you know, was like, oh, Alabama, they haven't been good since 1992. I mean, that's literally what was going through my head. And I lost money in the SEC title game, and I think I lost money in the national title game. And I started to go, wait a minute, I might not want to put money on this Alabama or against this Alabama team anymore. And I began to learn my lesson quickly. So that's what I remember most about that team.
So this is the fifth year of this podcast, which means we started in 2012. So we weren't around for the 09 season. We actually weren't around for the 11 championship either. So our first season was the McCarron 12 championship. And the first season, I think the first show, the first gambling rule we ever made on this podcast was do not bet against Nick Saban's Alabama. And this is where it began. So, Ryan, why don't we talk about 2008 Florida? Because these were back-to-back years and back-to-back Heisman Trophy winners, and they each played each other in their respective seasons. So I don't want to spoil too much before we get to the analysis.
Absolutely, Tom. Well, this 08 team, obviously led by Heisman Trophy winner, all-around great person, the greatest player of my lifetime, the greatest human of my lifetime, Tim Tebow.
Won't return your calls.
Even though you'd be perfect together.
The greatest left-handed person of my lifetime, Tim Tebow. All right. Head coach Urban Meyer, fourth season. Dan Mullen, also in his fourth season, offensive coordinator. Charlie Strong in his sixth season. Pretty impressive that he was a holdover from the previous regime and that Urban Meyer kept him around and that he was fantastic for them. Maybe the hottest assistant coach in the country during his Florida tenure. This team, Tom, did not go undefeated. This is the only team in our probably top eight or so that did not have an undefeated season. But I think it's relevant because after that loss, we got the Tim Tebow speech, the greatest speech of my life. The Gettysburg Address can kiss my ass. Tim Tebow's post-game speech after the Mississippi loss is the greatest speech of all time.
It's certainly the greatest intentional sports speech. Now, I will argue that the Mike Gundy or the Allen Iverson or even Shaquille O'Neal's Pythagorean theorem speech may have been better for entertainment value. But of course, there's an unintentional element to all of those. I think this is the greatest speech that was intended to be a great speech.
Fair enough. Fair enough. So anyways, after that, they went on a roll. They went undefeated the rest of the year. They did beat Alabama in that SEC title game and then beat Oklahoma in the national championship game, beat Heisman winner Sam Bradford in the national championship game.
Yeah, so they rolled through two Heisman Trophy winners in back-to-back games for the SEC championship and for the national championship. And they did it with their own Heisman Trophy winner that year, Ingram. So, Dan, tell us what line you would set for this game and what over-under.
This is also hard. Not quite as hard as the last one. I'm going to keep this one pretty simple. I'm going to make it Florida -3.5. I think I'll make it just over a field goal. I think if you made it 3, everyone would take a Tebow and 3, but 3.5 with Saban's a little bit more tricky. The over-under I keep in SEC low 47.5. I think that makes about sense for both teams. So, yeah, that's my line in total for this one.
All right. So I have a pretty extensive analysis that I did earlier today. I'm happy to go first, but if one of you would like to go first, feel free. No?
I respect your research, Tom. Go for it.
All right, my research, I'll go first then. My research is centered around one thing, let's call it my hypothesis or my mission statement. Florida beat Alabama 31-20 in 2008. I wouldn't call it a blowout, but it was a fairly decisive victory. You know, Florida had the game in hand. In 2009, a year later, in the SEC championship, Alabama beat down Florida 32-13. Not as close as the score indicated. So the Alabama win was a little more of a beat down there than the Florida one. But let's just say that one year Florida won decisively, the next year Alabama won decisively in basically the same game. So my analysis centers around the question, what changed? And using what changed from 2008 to 2009, I think we can determine who would have won if both teams were playing at their peak. So I'll start with Florida. This was Urban Meyer's fifth year in 2009, or sorry, it was his fourth year in the 2008 season. By the time they lost in 2009, that would have been his fifth year. So coaches don't really change that much from their fourth to fifth year, in my opinion. For me, it's the first 3 years is when they really make the biggest climb. What did change, Dan Mullen leaves as offensive coordinator, replaced by Steve Adazio, who is certainly a competent coach, but no Dan Mullen. So that is, I'm going to say, the biggest change to Florida and a very important one. Another big important change to Florida is they lost Percy Harvin to the NFL draft. His role was filled by sort of a combo of David Nelson and Deontay Thompson in the slot. Those guys, while they're okay college players, they're certainly not the same. So that's a big loss. They also lost both offensive tackles. Carl Johnson, the left guard, moved over to left tackle. And he was replaced by a new guy, James Wilson. But on the offensive line, both Pouncey twins returned. So you're still getting some good offensive line play in that 09 season. They returned all three of their great running backs for the 09 season. Obviously, Tim Tebow was back. And this is very important. They returned 11 defensive starters from 08 to 09. So that defense that played Alabama and lost to Alabama in 09 was basically the same defense with a year more experience for everybody. So now let's talk about Alabama. This was Saban's third year. As I just said, third year was when a lot of coaches make sort of a giant leap up. We've seen a lot of coaches win championships in their third year. So I think although Saban's always been great, he had more of his players. And I think that's an important thing when talking about 2009 Alabama and why they were better than 08. One of the most important things, now they have Greg McElroy instead of John Parker Wilson, which is an enormous upgrade at the quarterback position. Alabama's offensive line only returned two starters from that 08 team that lost. They lost first-rounder Andre Smith, but they replaced him with another future first-round pick, James Carpenter. They had a third-rounder, Mike Johnson, who returned. They lost a third-rounder at center and replaced him with an all-SEC guy, but not a future pro. And then this is big. They lost Marlon Davis at right guard, who was an undrafted free agent for the NFL. But they replaced him with a little guy named Barrett Jones, a redshirt freshman who started his career, people might forget this, at guard, and would later move to center and win the Outland Trophy. So adding one of the greatest offensive linemen, if not the greatest offensive lineman of our life, to that 09 team. Not much changed at receiver. Running back, they went from Glenn Coffey starting with Ingram backing him up to Mark Ingram starting with Trent Richardson backing him up. I'm going to say that's a pretty significant upgrade.
Yeah, not bad.
Defense, only one real change. The D-line didn't change much. The linebackers, they still returned Rolando McClain, Dante Hightower. They returned three of the four in their secondary, but the new guy they added at safety, Mark Barron, a new addition to the 09 team, very important. So my conclusion, although Florida lost Dan Mullen, which is very important, and Percy Harvin, which is very important, this hurts, and this definitely accounts for why they weren't quite as good in 09, but I don't think this accounts for such a massive turnaround to go from decisively winning to getting blown out. I think what makes all the difference is that Alabama improved drastically from 08 to 09. Saban, more experience. McElroy now playing. Ingram-Richardson combo. Barrett Jones, Mark Barron. And that's why I'm going to say that these two teams playing at their peak is going to be a lot more like the 09 game than like the 08 game. And therefore, although I think it is slightly closer in score, I think you're looking at a same basic outcome as 09. Alabama wins 32-24. My pick is Alabama.
Okay, Tom. Okay. Some pretty good deep dives there. I'm going to jump in, Dan, if you don't mind.
Go right ahead.
Because I got some things that I need to say.
I know you do.
I'm going to take my homerism for Tim Tebow out right here for a minute. And I'm gonna go at Tom a little bit.
Bring it.
All right, Tom. You were on the right track. You were going in the right direction about the Dan Mullen leaving and Charlie Strong returning. However, one massive, massive, massive difference in those two seasons. In 08, when they shut down that Alabama running game, they were running that 4-3 base defense. For some reason, in 09, playing against a faster schedule, they moved into what?
The 3-4.
The rich.
Oh, no. Sorry. They moved into the nickel.
The rich rod 3-3-5, the biggest bullshit defense there is. And there's no way a 3-3-5 is ever going to match up against an Alabama running game, especially one with an improved offensive line. So that was, to me, the biggest difference. The coaches can come and go. Percy Harvin's, you know, a special player, but those guys can come and go. But to me, that is a huge, huge difference. That's what took down Michigan when Rich Rod moved them to a 3-3-5. He started recruiting a completely different type of player, and that's what made Michigan go to shit, you know, for a few years. So for me, I think that was a huge, huge thing. The other thing that you kind of kept bringing up was the difference in the scores between the two games. So basically, it's a difference of one touchdown, right?
But it's not just the score. It was the utter domination in 09.
It was an utter domination. If Tim Tebow threw a pick in the end zone early in the fourth quarter, they score that. It's the exact same score, 32-20 or 31-20. If he throws a touchdown early in the fourth quarter, that momentum changes completely, and I don't think you'll see that as a utter domination. It's a two-score game with 12 minutes left. That's not utter domination. So I think we're kind of looking at this a little bit skewed from those two factors. Those are the two things that kind of, I think, jumped out to me. It's not as big of a blowout as you think it was. And I think that the change in defensive formation make all the difference in the world. If you're taking the 08 team, which ran that 4-3, I absolutely.
Uh-oh. I think Skype cut Ryan off. You got cut off at the very end there, Ryan. Oh.
All right.
You back?
Cool. I'll say it again for emphasis. 27-23 Florida Gators.
All right. I think you gotta reiterate the last thing you said. Before the score, you know, the last like 30 seconds.
Well, basically, it was just what I had been saying. I just think that the difference in the defensive formation makes all the difference in the world. You know, I think that having that extra defensive lineman is so important against Alabama, like you said, an improved offensive line. So for me, I think that that changes everything, and I think that does push Florida over the edge. So 27-23 Florida.
All right. I am willing to concede. I may have taken the defensive shift too lightly and not taken that enough into account. I still think they dominated that 09 game regardless of final score. But I am willing to concede that maybe because I thought Tim Tebow would come out and wax them and that they won by so much, maybe I'm overrating what a blowout it is. I don't know. You know, I'm willing to be convinced, but it doesn't matter because Dan now has the deciding vote. And so, Dan, take your time, savor the flavor. You get to choose this one.
Let me just lean into this one a little bit. A lot of good points, gentlemen. A lot of arguments can be made. We can go back and forth for a long time on this one. But as I sit here in front of my computer and I go over their schedules, I can't help but to notice that the 2009 Alabama schedule seems a little bit light. I feel like they played no hard games except for the SEC title game. They didn't play anyone at all. They had one game against the top 10 team, which was LSU, which they played at home, and LSU doesn't have a quarterback. And then they caught lightning in a bottle.
Wait, Dan.
Wait.
How do you know that LSU didn't have a quarterback? I mean, you haven't even looked it up.
I can just assume. I don't need to click that link, Tom. It's a rabbit hole. So they beat a shitty LSU team at home. They caught lightning in a bottle in the SEC title game. They go to the national title game, and they beat a Colt McCoy-less Texas team. Then the following season, they return the entire team. I know we don't like to do this, but they return the whole team, and they lose three games. In as much as this as this Alabama team's amazing. I think Nick Saban outcoached Urban Meyer in that SEC title game. I think he caught him off balance. A lot of different new formations and attacks that they weren't used to. Alabama was very conservative the whole year, relied on their defense, running game, but they actually opened it up right off the bat. The game was, you know, on turf in a dome, which was smart, and they did a lot of play action pass. Hats off to them for that one. But I think if they play again, I can't go against Tim Tebow, Urban Meyer, Dan Mullen, and Charlie Strong. The problem for Alabama, much like the problem for Alabama or for Miami, was that I don't trust McElroy. Same thing. The very next year, where there were situations where we were like, don't worry, it's McElroy. He'll take him down the field. It didn't happen over and over again. He wasn't elite. He was the worst Alabama quarterback of this, you know, generation, I think, or, you know, Nick Saban run anyway. Because of that, I think Florida wins this game. And I think they win it 27-23, and they move on to face Nebraska.
Oh, wow. All right. So I'm outvoted there. Florida moves on to the championship game. So we've got 1995 Nebraska with Tommy Frazier versus 2008 Florida with Tim Tebow. That is a hell of a matchup.
Great matchup, Tom.
So
exciting.
Yeah. Excellent. So it's going to be a week or two before we get to that one, but what are your initial thoughts, guys?
Initial thoughts are it's interesting how we are of the generation of, you know, passing attack and spread form and Big 12 and Baylor and all this other crap, and we pick Florida Tebow and Tommy Frazier as the two best teams, and we kick to the curb Vince Young and USC running around in Miami, you know, winning 55-0 and sending the whole team to the league and half the team to the Pro Bowl. I mean, no. Power running, really good defense, really good line play, which shows that our evolution of football thinking really has come, you know, full circle. And I think it's really helped us improve in terms of picking games over the past 5 years. I mean, I think before we made a lot of mistakes getting too excited over certain, you know, flashy teams. And now we've seen them lose to more physical squads or teams that have, you know, a home field or a coaching, you know. I think we were more likely to lay 8.5 points on the road last year as opposed to this year. We're like, no way. Road, forget it. You know, things like that. So I know it's a long-winded rant, but I think it's interesting that we picked two power running teams as the two best. So we'll see how it plays out. Very interesting.
I mean, this was always the Oregon dilemma with us 5, 8, 10 years ago. We loved Oregon. We loved the Chip Kelly offense. And once a year, they would go up against Auburn or LSU or one of those Southeastern teams. And we would talk ourselves into laying money on Oregon. Well, we knew that the SEC had the more physical guys and they had just as much speed, but we just thought some of these Oregon playmakers are just so skilled and their quarterbacks are so amazing that they have to just, you know, they're going to be tough to keep up with. But then every year we learn, whether it's Cam Newton's Auburn or LSU, they always just had enough physicality and running game and they had the speed to match up. And, what I'm saying is it only took us like 30 years to learn our lesson, Dan, but we got it eventually.
Yeah, but with advancements in technology, we're going to be alive for another 60. So we still got 2/3 of a cup full. I'm looking at this, I think. So I plan on living to 95. So
yeah, you're going to be on your deathbed like, hang on. I just need to put in this over bet.
Ha, pick six.
Over. Like, this one's for my kids.
Yeah. +9.5. Looking for a backdoor. And my will. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, you'll actually die with a bet still pending. The results of which have to be clarified in your will. It'll be like, Dan won $3,000 on 2052 Nebraska and the over. Yep. The over of 342.
You have to cash it in.
And well, it'll be in dispute. You know, your seven kids will all fight over who gets that money.
That I know of.
Yes, exactly. More will come out of the woodwork to claim that cash.
At least 12.
Ryan, anything you want to add?
Have a happy holiday, people. Be safe. Be courteous. Be respectful in the airports. To all you people sitting in the dark in the Atlanta airport, suck it. Shouldn't have been flying through Atlanta airport.
That'll be old news by the time I post this.
Doesn't matter. They're going to go lose power again. That's their fault for flying through Atlanta. Don't do it. So,
that's a good point.
Whatever you're doing this holiday season, be safe, be courteous, be respectful. Watch football.
A special thank you, Ryan. And a quick little feed off of that. A special thank you to all the people who work this holiday season and work in restaurants and hotels and airlines and things like that. It's not easy on you to take time off to see your family when the place where you work is open every day. So thank you to you. We do appreciate it.
Yeah, Dan, I was going to ask you as a restaurateur or, somebody in the business, you know, what can people do to be a more respectful clientele in general, but especially like a New Year's or, you know, holiday?
Just keep your mouth shut. Just say the very fewest amount of words in all transactions, whether it's ordering takeout on the phone, ordering drive-through, ordering in line, ordering in a restaurant. If a waiter explains something, don't ask any questions. Don't ask for any special preparations. Don't ask the host recommendations. Don't ask the bartender how long he's worked there. Don't ask the airline person if they're having a good day. Just keep your mouth shut and get where you need to be. Then talk to your fucking family all you want.
That is the exact opposite of the advice everybody outside the restaurant industry gives you.
I tell the truth. Just shut up. Just don't. If everyone just was silent, it would be so perfect. Just go in there and be like, hello, how are you? I'm good. Would you know what you like to eat? Yeah, I'll have this bacon cheeseburger with fries and a Coke. All right, I'll be right back. And that's it. I don't need to ask any more questions. That's it. Sit there. Ask for the check when it's over. Give him a thumbs up while chewing to say that it's good. You don't even need to say a word. And then that's it. You drop your money. You get out of there. Moral of the story is just try to be nice to people. And if you're incapable, which most people are, and that's fine, then you just got to cut yourself off and just not speak. It's really that simple. So put your headphones on, shut your mouth, get in and out.
Yeah, Dan, I've heard a lot of people who work in, you know, bartending, restaurants, et cetera, retail. And I kind of saw it in my short stint at Dick's Sporting Goods when I worked there summer of 2000. People say that working in retail or restaurants kind of destroys their faith in humanity a little bit. Would you agree with that? That's not a very Christmassy or New Year's-y message, but.
No, those people are the idiots who only see the negative. You know, I mean, for me, I try to focus on the positive. I see people working all year round, 22 hours a day we're open. I see people in hard situations with call-outs and being shorthanded, work tough and, you know, work hard for, you know, relatively very little money. You know, these people come from, you know, kind of harder areas. If you're, you know, working a minimum wage job and it isn't your, you know, first employment or, you know, it's not your first, you know, job, you know, while in high school, then, you know, obviously things are not perfect in your life. So, you know, hats off to these kids for showing up every day and people working their asses off. That's what I see, you know, and that's what I try to compliment people on. So I think the people who say, you know, destroy faith in humanity are just assholes. You can read, you know, Twitter, you know, every day and see the same thing or go hang out at a shopping mall and just walk around. But restaurants, there's some good people out there.
Good. I think that's a good positive holiday message to end on.
Thank you.
All right. Happy holidays. Bye, everybody. Take the point.